Back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. With me today is a very special guest, Mike Shanklin. He has almost a million views on his videos on YouTube. And if you're not familiar with Mike, if you haven't seen his YouTube videos, get to BadQuaker.com, hit the link, get over to YouTube, and you're going to be amazed. Mike, thanks for coming on the show with me.
Hey, it's great to be here. What an honor. I've seen a lot of your work, and I'm just glad I can contribute.
Well, thank you. I had no idea you even knew who I was or what I did.
Yeah, I did a little research on you. I saw some of your interviews. I saw one night you had an interview at 3 a.m. in the morning. I love your YouTube videos, too. I think you really hit on some pertinent points. Something that volunteers should use more often. They often get stuck in, repeating a couple pretty generic phrases, and I wish they would expand some of their vocabulary, some of their ideal structure. There's so many points that we have. I mean, we have all these facts on our side. I just hope that as volunteers out there listen to your videos and my videos, that they can look at it from a bigger picture and be able to attack this with different types of points that just basically debunk statism altogether.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's kind of like having more arrows in your quiver, so to speak, to have a wider variety. Because really, you know, the people that we're trying to reach out there are coming from a vast wasteland of different kinds of ideologies that, to try to pigeonhole everybody into one set of things is really not going to be as productive for us.
You're right, and even think about this. Let's take it the next step. Let's say we are living in it and we achieve this voluntary society. Even inside of that, there's going to be people who, you're still going to have racists in the world. I mean, some people are just going to be ignorant.
Right.
They're not allowed to use, aggressive coercion on other people. But you're going to have some that are anarcho-communists, and they're going to build their own little commune, and you're going to have anarcho-capitalist cities. And I mean, even inside of voluntarism itself, there's still going to be sects and chunks and niches. As much as we would all like for all of us to be pretty similar and all get along perfectly, nobody's ever saying the world's going to be perfect. We're just saying there's a better way for society to handle complex problems.
All it seems, in a sense, it seems really simple. If you just remove this one flaw from society, which is the aggression of the state. If you just take that one thing out and don't try to make anew anything, just take that one thing out and then see what happens.
Right. And that's the thing. So many people like to say the word we. You'll see one of my videos on YouTube is entitled, You Are Not the Government. And what I try and get, so many young people, especially that I talk to, when they talk about countries, it's always us and them. You know, there's always this division that statism creates between the international, regions, between these different countries, these different states, these different nations. And the mind kind of gets lost in this division. Voluntarism, that would never be an issue. That would never be a problem. You are not a part of this government. I might be a white person, but that doesn't mean I'm like every other white person out there. Just like somebody else might be Indian or Mexican or black. It doesn't matter. Everybody is an individual. And until I think we see society kind of take a step towards individualism, with that perspective, in combination with the non-aggression principle, with the zero aggression principle and axiom, until we reach, somewhere close to that, I don't think it's going to take 100% of the people to get to that point. But it's going to take a pretty big chunk. And it doesn't take, it's not like it's going to be just 80% overnight, but it will take getting to 5% of the people. And then it's just going to slowly spread to 10%, especially as governments continue and they continue to produce the same failures. People aren't just, you can't have that much insanity, at least I hope not. Who knows what the future is going to hold. But in all reality, I just can't see the state continuing on forever and ever and ever. It will fail, and it's built to fail. It's mind is faulty from its very roots. And I think that's the message that we as voluntarists have to deliver to the public.
In a very real sense, our greatest weapon in fighting the state is the existence of the state. It's so horrible in every way and so hideous in every way that the more people get to really see what its nature really is, the less number of people are going to be fooled by it. On the other hand, as long as the state can stay small and weak and doesn't intrude upon anything, then people don't really realize its nature, and they really never get to see what the thing is like, you know, in its fullness.
And here's another thing, too. You're right about that. I mean, the state trying to educate people about voluntarism, it's going to be a lot easier to spread voluntarism in a voluntarist society where you have more examples of how it works, when you can look back on the past and see all the failures of sadism. Mm-hmm. Living in it, it's very difficult. Think about the proportion, and I'm talking at great margins, of children that are indoctrinated into public education. Most of them struggle in many, you know, different fields, as far as science, as far as math, as far as reading. I was lucky enough to go to a mixture of both. Now, I had more private school than I did public, but I had a nice experience in both fields, in both the public sector and the private sector, as far as education goes. And there is a huge difference. Mm-hmm. Anybody who says there's not, you know, maybe they're living in different regions. And I'm not trying to compare, Blue Valley to some, you know, orphanage, you know, type Christian private education.
Right.
I'm talking about the average education systems. Those who are outside of the state's control often have a greater incentive to truly educate, to, you know, try and get Mensa awards, to try and have the top ACT and SAT scores. This is just the way that the market tries to push it. But the public school just tries to make everybody as equal as possible. It's well known for holding back those who need to advance quicker, to try and pull up those who are actually pulling the rest of them down. And I think this is a sign that the state brings to this market, to this industry, to education. Is it stunts education on true rationality and reason? It's not as if you can ever have a true anarcho-capitalist go into a public education system and just talk about the facts like we're talking here on this radio show. It's not that easy. It's just like you're not going to get an anarcho-capitalist or a voluntarist up at the very top of government, like president or senator. A true voluntarist, a true non-aggressionist, mm-hmm. will never get to that point, and nobody will ever take them seriously if they even try to preach up there. So this is what we have to deal with, is the fact that we are ever surrounded by the state, and we're trying to educate people out of it while still being trapped to it, and so many people are just indoctrinated into it from birth that they never even see it. It's kind of like they get blindsided by it. I know for a fact that that's the case, because that happened to me for 25 years. You know, it's just a few years ago, 5 years ago or so, that I really truly started to understand voluntarism and the non-aggression principle. Heck, there was a point I still strongly correlated it with Ron Paul. I didn't really truly see voluntarism until about 2 years after starting to support Ron Paul. So it took a while for me to even break out of that minarchist shell, which I've long since broken part of, and I'm still embarrassed about, the first 25, 26 years of my life, the status that I was. But the point is, I'm a perfect example to others who might be listening out there that change is possible, that you can gain more sanity, that you can enjoy life more, and honestly and truly examine virtue ethics, something that I don't think humanity has done enough, which has created this ruckus, this circus, this mythical creature called statism.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wasn't sure what your background was as far as how long you had, how long it had been since you took the red pill, so to speak. But the amazing thing is, going back, I think back like in the late 80s when Ron Paul was running for president the first time, and the people that I knew who were libertarian-leaning, or the few that were actually, you know, anarchist of one form or another, they had pretty much always been that way, and there were just no new recruits there, or I don't know if that's the right terminology, but there were no new people. Well, in 88, and 86, and 85, you knew the little circle of people you knew, and that was it. And we didn't seem to be expanding in any way. And I don't know, you know, it's a weird combination of the growth of the state and Ron Paul and the internet and the abundance of information from places like the Mises Organization and you know, Mises.org and things like that. All of these seem to have come together in like this perfect storm to create this this new wave of liberty that's coming through.
Yeah, it's very true. I'm lucky enough. I don't know what it is. For some reason, I just have a passion for this. I see an ill, and I can't just not do anything. I just have to do something. You know, if you saw somebody, some poor lady getting raped, you wouldn't just walk away. I mean, some people would, but I can't.
Right.
And that's the way I feel so passionate about this cause. It's really good, though, that I just happen, you know, to be halfway decent to getting the message out in some form or fashion. Some people don't like the way I advertise the message. Some people love it to death. And they, you know, they're big supporters. But the fact is, I'm lucky enough to have people in my life that I have, you know, helped them at least understand the non-aggression principle, and the rest kind of, it's not like I have to make them think. It's not like I tell them what to think. And I just give them my opinion. I say, listen, you're going to have to come to your own conclusion. And I say this to everybody. But there are some certain facts that are out there that, you know, please debunk them, but if you can't debunk them, let's not argue about them anymore. Let's just make them facts, because we know they're facts, and we can move on from there. But after that, you come to your own conclusions. And I'm lucky enough to have seen the fruits of my labor, you know, come to some sort of a realization, where I have lots of different friends and people in my life that have come over to voluntarism. It's not like you have to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you have to, like, pack up and change your whole life. Sure, you might have to change some things in your life, but most of us already live that voluntarist lifestyle, you know. We've all heard the argument that most of us don't go around stabbing people. We don't go steal from people.
Right.
You know, we don't kidnap people. I mean, this is just a pretty well-known fact. I don't have to carry a machine gun with me everywhere I go, unless maybe I'm in, like, Brooklyn, where culture, which, you know, as Stefan Molyneux says, the first four letters in that explain the rest of it. It's cult, you know. The culture down in some of the more impoverished regions, you know, they generally have less work ethic, less advancement opportunities, and not only that, just a lower education level. It's really just, you know, outside of that region, most people don't have to, you know, worry about getting shot or just having people come steal from them. It's generally 90% of the people or the population just don't do that. We're all pretty good people. So it's not like you have to make this jump to voluntarism. So when I say they changed over to voluntarism, it's not like they changed this great thing in their life. It's just coming to the realization that threats of aggressive coercion on peaceful individuals, people like me who have never infringed on somebody else, you don't have a right to point a gun at me. And then that doesn't matter if one person does it, if 300 people do it, if 300 million or the world 6.5 billion plus people do it. It does not make it ethical, and it will never be ethical. We have to come to this fact. So once again, I just try and lay out as many facts for people as possible and let them come to their own conclusions, which I just lay out a path for them to see, you know, virtuous behavior and rationality and reason.
Mm. And then they can make that choice on their own.
Well, that's the only option we have, really. What are you going to do, force somebody into that? It doesn't really work that way. Even the greatest brainwashers inside the state, the propagandists for the state, because don't act like voluntarists are the only ones who have their information out that they're trying to spread voluntarism. The state spreads propaganda every single second. Single, not just day, minute, an hour, but every second. Let's not act as if they're not, you know, guilty of this as well. But it is important for us to realize that many of the greatest brainwashers out there, they didn't have to force people into that ideology. They didn't have to point a gun at them. They basically con them into it. I don't have to con anybody into anything. That's the beauty of my, you know, doing this on the side and spending all this time on things. It just actually makes me feel more ethical. You know, maybe there is no real marginal gain out of me doing this. Maybe there's zero utility, right? We could argue that as well.
Mm.
But I don't think that's the case. I have seen gains. I have seen positive results. And I think I'm going to continue to see positive results exponentially as more and more people find that they're running out of excuses. That's what it seems to come down to. Most minarchists or past minarchists I know, they just ended up running out of excuses, and I was similar. That's how, you know, I really came over to anarchy. I just started running out of excuses for the minarchist arguments, and the whole left-right paradigm just kind of, you know, it just slapped me in the face one day, and I saw it for what it was, just one, you know, one fist on the same beast, you know, basically using tyranny on peaceful individuals, and that's all the state can do. And let's be honest here. And if some people say, well, you know, you have to have the government to protect property, and you have to have government out here to protect people from stabbing each other, and all these other different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it's such a great thing that's out here that's doing all this great, people should be able to voluntarily fund it as they see fit. I mean, why do I have to fund something? Just because you think it's great doesn't mean I have to fund it. That's right there, you know, breaking the non-aggression principle. That is aggression through taxation.
Right.
Let alone taxation through citation. So we have to come to that question of, you know, let's say the state is responsible for property rights. What if I want to go with my own protection services?
Mm-hmm.
What if I want to go with my own dispute resolution organization or my own multi-tiered arbitration system? What makes me have to go through your mediation? Why is it moral for you to force me into your monopoly? And that's what the state is. As long as people continue to fool themselves and imagine that the state is not a violent monopoly, let alone just a monopoly before we even get to the part of aggression, that it is a monopoly and it's a violent monopoly on top of it,
mm-hmm.
We're never going to make gains. That's why I attack those facts so wholeheartedly. I put so much time and effort to try and to strike the root. And you know, that's where we're going to see the most gains. This is my 2 cents, of course.
Uh-huh.
I'm speaking for all voluntarists here. But this is where I come from.
Yeah, I think you're dead right on that. You had one campaign that I really got excited about on YouTube, where you had people just make a little clip of them saying what they were and why they were. And you just had person after person saying, I'm an anarchist. And I was thrilled by that. That was a really neat campaign.
Yeah, that video was called Anarchy Rising. I'm actually in the works of making a new one. And I would love your input, Ben. always willing to have a great voice like yours. You know, somebody who's been out there defending the message of true voluntarism for a while. But Anarchy Rising actually has netted tens of thousands of hits, and it's still out there. I haven't looked at it recently to see where it's at. You know, I have almost 100 different videos out there that I put a lot of time and effort into. But that is one of you know, the videos that I still cherish deeply. One of my favorite videos, top five, definitely. Anarchy Rising itself did have a multitude of different voluntarists or non-aggressionists or anarcho-capitalists or freedomists, whatever you want to call it, that were on this video reel, and it just played, you know, from start to finish, people first introducing themselves and then hammering away on different points on voluntarism and then closing really, you know, firmly with the fact that government is aggression and that voluntarism is basically the non-aggression principle, and just stressing the fact that anarchy is not what you see on TV.
Right.
I had a clip from a very special person. You know, I have lots of people that I just can't thank enough for helping me make that video. But I just had to hammer away on the fact that most people have this negative connotation built into their head about the word anarchy, right? I mean, right off the bat, most people think of somebody throwing a Molotov cocktail into a government building or tearing down some private property or something like that.
Right.
That's just the first thing that pops into people's heads. But I don't think I've ever seen an anarcho-capitalist, somebody in a true voluntarist, ever partake in that type of behavior. I don't know one friend who's ever done that. And I know lots of voluntarists, you know. I mean, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of them. My Facebook wall is completely flooded. I can't even add any more people.
Mm-hmm.
People are on this waiting list, and I have like over 1,000 people on my queue list. It's on Facebook, on MySpace, I think it's up to 85,000. So there's a lot of people who have just watched my videos, and they just at least, hey, listen, I'm here for support. I'm going to give you that number. I'm going to show the rest of the world that you're not just some crazy loon out here just talking about just nothing. You're actually onto something. And that's kind of the thing we have to do is make this message more mainstream. As long as we're stuck as the outlier people, as the people that don't have a message, you know, we're never going to be taken seriously. And I'm not saying you got to enter the political realm. In fact, I encourage you not to. I don't think that's going to bring anything good, and that it's going to actually waste your time and your resources that you could be diverting towards other things, you know, with greater efficiency. But it is important for us to spread this message to as many different individuals as possible. Now, I'm not saying they're always going to be receptive, but we have to make it. This is why the internet, you know, like you were talking about earlier, and I'm sorry for talking and ranting so much, but there's this, there's a great point about the internet and how this connectivity between all peoples, really, especially as these third world and second world countries also gain internet access and have computers, and we can, and webcams, and they can maybe even translators, that we can all communicate, finally. You know, I am not somebody who's for one world government, but I am for one world as far as individual rights. I don't want nations. I don't want states. I, no offense to anybody who loves America out there. I'm glad you like this little region and what you think it stands for. But I just don't like any of it, and I don't need a master, nor do I want to put a master over somebody who doesn't want one. The whole ideal that 51% of a population can, you know, somehow control the other percent, whatever percentage that might be, is kind of ludicrous to me. It's really almost, it is insane. And it's, I heard Stefan Molyneux talking the other day about how he's embarrassed, you know, to have to tell his kids, you know, and describe the world to his kids. Yeah. I don't have children yet, Ben, but I'll tell you this right now. I completely agree with him already. I don't even have kids. I don't want to have to explain, you know, why wars are going on, or why this guy in this costume can come over into my house or to my neighbor's house, you know, and do it, you know, do whatever the little piece of paper that he has says. It just, even though the people never did anything to anybody else, I don't have to explain the war on drugs and how many deaths have occurred, even though marijuana has technically never even killed anybody, let alone the fact that I you know, whether I smoke it or not, or you smoke it or not, that has nothing to do with the fact that you can actually consume this plant or any other plant and not infringe on other peaceful people. As long as you're not hurting on rights, there's no victim, there's no crime. This is what is so important about things like FIJA, the Fully Informed Jury Association. One of my good friends, James Cox, he is over, he worked with FIJA for a while, and they did have a great job. This was basically based around jury nullification. Mm-hmm. Jury nullification states you don't have to get 50% of the population to agree to this ideal. If real change happens, you know, if you're going to have any type a change in the system, and you're going to have to go to jury duty anyway, you can at least try to use jury nullification if you are a juror in a case in which you feel there is no crime. In other words, no victim. You know, sometimes we have these crimes that are called crimes against the state. Mm-hmm. You know, there is no real true victim except for the government is the victim or society is the victim. In cases like that, where no other person, no individual has been harmed, you can actually use jury nullification. And FIJA, this is something I'm sorry to use your radio show as kind of a shout-out, but it's a very important cause to me. I have a very deep concern, and there's great intrinsic value for this cause. Now, a lot of those people who run FIJA are minarchists. And they have to be, because they have to fight inside of the system to try and pass out these pamphlets on the sidewalks where they're actually going to make a bit of difference. But really, all you have to do is get one person. You don't have to get 50%. You don't have to get a majority. You just have to get one person to hang the jury, and it could lead down the road to either, you know, the charges either being dropped or pushing it back to a jury that will not convict. So this is what we're looking to do, is spread education, spread ideals, and not only that, help people, you know, understand maybe how they can do this type of service. This is one thing I encourage everybody to do, and it's not because I work in an electronics store. I really want people to connect with each other. Go out and get a webcam. There's, you know, I'll tell you, Ben, the thing that's helped me learn the most is years ago, especially when I was a minarchist or even a statist, I would make videos and just talk, and I'd play them back and just watch myself talk. Mm. And there always seemed like to be this disconnect between, you know, back when I was more of a statist and now. But I never really, until I saw myself saying it, I was like, man, that sounds crazy. You know, that doesn't sound right. And then when I started doing that with voluntarism, I never had to worry about what I was saying. It just happens to be factual, and nobody can debunk it. So I've never gotten in trouble for it like I would have had I produced some of my old statist videos. And that's why I think I also have an advantage too, Ben, is a lot of other people You know, like you were talking about, them, there's just anarchists who, some of them were raised in anarchist families, and I'm talking about peaceful anarchists, once again, I want to stress that one more time. They're raised in very peaceful anarchy families, so they're raised that way. I had kind of the blessing, if you want to call it this way, I had the blessing, with quotation marks around it, of being a statist first for a majority of my lifetime and then coming over to voluntarism. So I know where many statists are coming from, mm-hmm. whereas people who are kind of raised in anarchy might not understand why all these statists are saying and doing all the things they do. You know, it's just, if we're going to be talking about my background, it's something I think it's an important point for people to realize. Those out there who did come to anarchy later on in life, you actually have an advantage over those who didn't. This is why I think Stefan Molyneux is so good. He remembers very, very well where he was 5, 10, 15 years ago, and he knows which points he used to argue, and he knows how to debunk them now. And that's what you have to do, is go back on your own life, see where you've made mistakes. Not only will it make you know you feel better about where you've come from, but it'll also help you advance your own dialectic skills for spreading the message of freedom to more individuals.
Absolutely. You can't really present an honest picture of anything if you're not willing to be honest with yourself and really self-examine and look back at yourself and really say, do I really believe what I'm saying? Why do I believe what I'm saying? I also wanted to mention that something you touched on there a little bit is the importance that each different person has a voice on this. Even if you think, if you're listening to a podcast like this or you're watching a YouTube video or whatever, and you think, yeah, but I could never do that, you know. But yeah, you can. It's really a lot easier than most people think. That, like, the first podcast that I did was horribly clumsy and very difficult and awkward. But you do it a couple times.
I'm sorry. How long ago did you start doing it? I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ben. I'm just curious about you, too. Some of you know my viewers are going to come, and they're going to want to know something about you because you're obviously such a strong proponent, and I think we're very similar in ideas. When were you, you know?
How would you like to support BadQuaker.com and get something nice for yourself at the same time? I want to tell you about Survival Gear Bags. It's run by my friend Kelly, who believes in and adheres to the non-aggression principle. Kelly's customers know him for his great customer service and his personal touch because Kelly handles all customer service himself. The main focus of Survival Gear Bags is to allow you to build your own custom emergency kits with quality gear. Now, I know this because I bought my bug out bag from Survival Gear Bags over 2 years ago, and I've gone all over the country with it by my side. And you can rest assured that the prices will always be the best they can be at Survival Gear Bags. And if you use the link from BadQuaker.com, they'll probably throw in something for free for you with your order. Now, how do you do this? Well, it's simple. You go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side of the page, click on the picture of the backpack. Then look around at Survival Gear Bags and find the stuff you want. You'll help BadQuaker.com, and you'll support a merchant that's one of us. Now, I want to tell you about another way you can support BadQuaker.com and get something really cool at the same time. Shire Silver. Shire Silver is the proud seller of silver and gold trade cards. Shire Silver believes that silver and gold trade cards will show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. So what are silver and gold trade cards? There are specific weights of gold and silver laminated inside credit card-sized tradable cards. They're a handy and affordable way to trade precious metals. These cards received nationwide recognition when they were widely used as barter at the New Hampshire Porcupine Festival. You want a beer and a hot dog? Hand them a Shire Silver 5 card and get a Shire Silver 1 spot back as change. So again, what do? Well, you go to BadQuaker.com. On the right side, just below the backpack, you'll see the Shire Silver trade cards. Click on those cards and then check out Shire Silver's site. Be sure and watch Ron's video that's right there on the main page. And then swap some of those ridiculous Federal Reserve notes for something of real value. Something you can keep, trade, or give as the coolest gift ever. But be sure and use the link from BadQuaker.com. Thanks, folks.
When did you very first start doing a podcast, and how many have you done?
My podcasts, I almost at 1 year with my podcast. There's about 130 of them. Plus, I've done probably 10 or 15 just articles that I wrote and then read them. They're like 1,500, 2,000 words, so it's like 10 minutes. You know, and that's really what I cut my teeth on, is doing those first. And some of those were very awkward. Even the recordings that are still out there, some of the recordings are very choppy and awkward. But I came into it slowly like that. As far as the Liberty Movement itself goes, you know, I was very on and off. I was very enthusiastic in the late 70s. And life and the state and everybody just kind of kicked me in the teeth. And so I quieted down and hid, you know, hid among the statists and got a job and just earn a living and raise a family. And then each time, like in the mid-80s or in the late 80s, I would feel, literally feel guilty about what was floating around in my mind that I couldn't really do anything about. In the 80s, I had a little bit of the ability to express it in 88 when Ron Paul ran as the Libertarian candidate. But even then, the vast majority of people had no idea there was a Libertarian Party, much less who this weird doctor was, you know? So again, I would just pound that all back down, keep it quiet, go back to work. In the aerospace and defense industry, you don't do a lot of talking about that kind of liberty. The word liberty in that industry means we're blowing up people in faraway countries, and therefore we have liberty. But it really, once I got out of there and I was able to speak my voice freely, then I you know, first writing on the internet under a dozen different fake names, you know, hoping nobody would connect them back to me. And then eventually, one of the people on the internet that I have a lot of respect for, a fellow podcaster in the survival end of the spectrum, a guy named Jack Spierko, he said, if you're not willing to be honest about who you are and come out front and say, this is me, I'm a real person, I'm not hiding behind a fake name, this is me. If you're not really willing to do that, then immediately there's a question as to how honest you are. And I couldn't stay hidden any longer. I had to come out. That was about a year. Well, actually, I started using my real name about 2 years ago. But it took me then about a year to get the website all together and get financial backing and that whole thing. But that's my story.
Well, that's a great story. And, you know, it is sad. Even when I was a blooming anarchist, I was kind of, you know, I would try to avoid the word. You know what I'm saying? Now I have no problem saying it, and I can defend, you know, my argument pretty well, and at least show people the gun in the room, as they like to call it. But it is sad that we've had so many anarchists. It's like you're in the closet, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're watching the gay community come out, and you're thinking to yourself, the next step for humanity is for the anarchists to come out of the closet. You know what I'm saying? That's what it feels like to me. And so we're stuck in this world where so many people are either on the border of the fence, they don't know whether to jump over, or they've already jumped, and they're kind of like hiding behind a rock. And you know, they don't want their friends to know how you know, their mind works, even though there's nothing to hide. You have facts. You have reason. So if there's one thing I can tell people out there is do not be afraid to make the message of anarchy mainstream. That's our next goal. That's how you create real change. That's how you spread it to more individuals. Like I've said before, you know, I'm not here to change the world. I would like to change the world. But when I say this rest of the show, I'm sure what I'm going towards. It's not that I'm here to change the world. Per se, is I'm trying to change a few people who I believe will help me change a lot more people who will go out there and make it mainstream, and that's how you change the world. So, you know, it takes little chunks here. It's not like, you know, you can just tap a whole oil field in one night. It takes years and years and years of solid pumping. It's a long, thought-out process. I personally never think, I don't think I'll ever see true voluntarism in my life, where it stretches the globe. We have no more Koreas, we have no more Chinas, we have no more Americas, we have no one world government either, none of that stuff. We just have truly, you know, like peaceful interactions for the most part. Maybe you could look for some type of private protection services, which would fight for efficiency and have many competitors trying to bring the best protection and try to catch the most criminals without, you know, while infringing on the least amount of peaceful people. That right there in itself, I think, is the future that we need to show people more often, help them understand it. It is the next step. And the first step of that is to get more people active, like I was saying earlier, buy webcams, get a headset, get on that on the internet like I'm doing, and you can get your millions of hits too. It's really just about consistency and keeping to the message. That's what I think we need to focus on, and it starts by taking the first action of just signing on to YouTube or on Facebook and getting an account mm-hmm. and connecting with other people who are in a similar mindset, and you know, helping their friends and family members see that the reality of the situation, which is that the state, even if you want to build up a state, you can have people build up a state all they want, but that state will never have the legal right or the ethical right to aggress and infringe or impose taxation or mandates or drafts or war on drugs on peaceful people. There is no such thing as violence, good violence on peaceful people. There's no such thing as that. That's all we have to help people understand, while helping them see, you know, a future without the state, to help them not fear not having this violent monopoly, you know, basically dictating down to us, helping them understand, you know, see through all the propaganda when the state basically comes to us, and especially our children, and says, we're the protector, when they're really the infringer. You know, this extortion-based proprietarian security state is an oxymoron in itself. It is so hypocritical, I don't even know where to start. You cannot protect property by first stealing it. That will never be a true axiom. You can never hold that as a virtual fact or an ethical fact. It's contradictory. And that's one, you know, another point we need to continue to hammer. I know I have lots of points here. But really, I think I've summed up quite a few of them in that speech. But Ben, you know, when you had that video the other day that you made, you hammered away on so many points. I'm trying to think of a few right now. One of them was basically that people are government. When people say, well, the government builds the roads, the government builds the schools, or the government builds hospitals or something like that, to that effect, well, technically, the people that are a part of government are doing it. It's just regular people.
Yeah.
You know, people have this, like, film that's like there's this anti-kryptonite, you know, suit that's built onto government. The rest of us are weakly affected with kryptonite. And with only the state can push away this kryptonite and make all of us stronger and push us forward. That's the opposite of it. It's nothing but aggressive coercion. It's intervention into efficiency. It stops efficiency in most cases rather than helping. And I'm sure there's some safety regulations that are good, but that doesn't mean you need the state to do it. You're going to have a couple firms really have some bad things happen, and then the rest of the population catches on. And you don't need somebody telling you, you know, don't drive off the road, right? You don't need a sign that says that.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, we think that we have to have the state telling us what to do in our lives every day, in every single realm, telling us what to eat, telling us how to raise our kids, you know, telling us what we should be doing more of in our lives. And, you know, if they have these suggestions, they can pass them on, but they do not have this ethical right to steal from us. And that's another thing. I do want to stress the fact that people do have a right to form, you know, some type of a collective. I will never say that anarchy is no collective. You can have a voluntary collective. What I'm trying to say here is that it will lead to aggressive coercion in the end. It will have power mongering, and that it will not end in the best interests of the average individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that every single form of collectivism takes away a choice from an individual, a choice of freedom from an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that we need to think of and understand. Every government that's ever been out there has been basically let off the chains. Even 5 seconds after the Constitution was signed, the state started just swallowing up, you know, what little bit of freedom they tried to actually protect in the first place in the Republic. It's all a farce. So when anybody tries to tell you, hey, we can fight for this minimal state, all I have seen is federal income and revenue increasing from a tax perspective sixfold since 1901. Since 1901, the government takes in six times more tax revenue and has a lot more of gross GDP than it did, you know, just 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely out of whack. For anybody to honestly believe that you can even cut that in a third, let alone a half, or even into 10% or 5% of what it is today, to me is just, you know, they're fooling themselves. We have to be rational. When the state does come to this point, where we have to educate enough people to what the state is and have enough of them not support the state, once it starts to, you know, the debts start to crumble and they don't have, you know, the Ponzi scheme is running out, that's the best chance for us to truly push it away forever. And I'm with a lot of other voluntarists out there who believe in the single-time eradication principle, which means basically once you get rid of statism in humanity, just like, you know, in America, how we got rid of chain slavery, I don't think I'll ever see chain slavery come back again. But it's so funny. If you would have said 300, 400 years ago to a slave, oh, you know, in 500 years, slavery will never be again in America, people would be like, are you freaking kidding me? They'd be laughing. It's going to go on forever, they'd say, you know?
Yeah.
Same thing as with statists today. They're basically defending an unethical position that they have little knowledge about, and they try to pass it off as the ethical argument because it's for the many versus the few who control. But the opposite's true. The politicians are the few controlling the many, and not virtuously. They do have special interests. They do use aggressive coercion on peaceful people, and they always will. And this is what the system produces, and it can't produce anything else. It's inherently built that way.
Yeah, it's as simple as that old statement, two rights can't make a wrong. I mean, if you really think about that, I said that backwards. Two wrongs can't make a right. And the same thing is true with government on any level. It doesn't matter. You know, some people say, well, if we just shrink it down to where it's like this or like that, well, go get involved in your city council and you'll see corruption that you never imagined existed. It's any time that aggression is used and this belief that it's legitimate, once you accept that belief, then it's like the genie's out of the bottle. There's no possible way that you can reel the thing back in and say, well, you know, 30% aggression's okay, but not 32%. This is where we have to draw this line. Well, that doesn't make any sense at all. You know, you either accept that aggression upon peaceful people is immoral, or you have to accept that aggression on peaceful people is justifiable. And when you really come to that point, then the only thing I think left is the practical outworking. Okay, well then how can we make it work? Well, if you really believe that it's unethical to aggress upon peaceful people, you don't have to know every aspect of how it'll work. You've already guaranteed that it will work.
And you know, that's a great point. I really do agree with that. And along this topic here, it's important for people to realize that, you know, that this aggression, this taxation, it's not just theft, okay? It's a lot worse than just, you know, I'm going to threat to steal from you and then I steal from you. I like to actually step people through the whole process to help them really see the reality of the world that they live in, mm-hmm. and see if this is actually civilized behavior. And what I mean by this is, I'll ask somebody, what happens if you don't pay your taxes? What happens if your grandma doesn't pay her taxes? She just doesn't want this. She's tired of funding the war. She has a moral obligation not to fund it. She wants to give to charities that are actually going to do something. So your grandma just says, as an adult who's seen the world, I freely, you know, as a person who should be free, decide not to just give my money to this inefficient system. What if they believe in this other thing? What happens if your grandma doesn't pay their taxes? And no, and I don't just first answer, you know, after they give me whatever response they give me, I don't just jump into the fact of, oh, they're going to arrest her, you know. I walk them through the process. I say, listen, they're going to actually send her a letter, mm-hmm. okay? And it's going to say, hey, you forgot to send us your check. You forgot to file your taxes. You know, please fill this form out and send it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, a couple weeks down the road, they won't get their money, and so they'll write another nice letter. And it'll be a little bit more firmer this time, of course. And it'll basically say, now, come on, give us the money. We don't want any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And once again, she's like, well, you know what? I still peacefully just disagree with this. No thanks. You know, I feel like I could protect myself better with this other protection agency and protect more of my neighbors than having this, you know, monopoly police station that would rather write tickets for seatbelts than, you know, catching theft and rape and murders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't want to do that. So the third letter comes in. It's basically like, this is your last warning. This is it. If you do not pay us this money, we will be coming to your house. You know, you will not have a choice as to whether to answer the door this time, you know? And once again, she continues to say, I should have the right to not pay into this Ponzi scheme, to what I believe is unethical. I'm an adult. This is what I earned. I labored for this. This is my life, my labor, my property. I should have the right to do what I want with it, and I choose to not support your unethical ways. They will come to her house with guns drawn. They will point them at your grandma. They will point guns at your grandma, at her, whatever the family member she has in the house, her pets, her cat, her dog.
Yep.
They will arrest her. They will kidnap her and throw her in a cage. and then they will steal her money on top of it. So this is the reality of what people somehow have come to know as civilized behavior. To me, is the least civilized thing I have ever heard of, and how so many individuals in my life allow me to be raised around this, not knowing it, is very upsetting. Still to this day, I have issue with many people in my life that possibly knew about this or could have known about it, took in the time to simply tap into their ethical side and never did so.
Yeah.
And so it thwarted my environment growing up as a child and my raising. So I am a little bitter still to this day, and I'm trying to let some of that go. And it's been a very hard path. But there's something I've realized, forgiveness, it's not always for the person who needs to be forgiven. It's for the person who's forgiving. It's a win-win situation. It's actually not parasitical, but symbiotic. And that's something I've had to come to. Another harsh reality, another lesson of life that voluntarism has helped bring to me and to my environment. Everywhere you look, we have to realize that taxation is much worse than just theft. It is threats of theft and kidnapping, basically assault and kidnapping.
Yep.
And this is just, for some reason, the way that people think it should be run, and they don't see any problem with it. They don't even question it. They'd rather divert their time and waste it on things like the left-right paradigm. Like I said in one video, if we had the Glass-Steagall Act, none of this would have happened. Well, the Patriot Act came too, we should have had that back in 1990. And you get back in this left-right argument, and it's all over the place. People just trying their best to ignore the ethical argument and instead focusing on political arguments. So that's why I try and steer people away from politics and towards ethics. And I think that's the only way we're going to have, children that are raised in a better world. Less war, less taxation, if we can end the state at all, let alone less statism.
On the grandmother argument, and that's an absolutely valid argument, are you familiar with the story? I think it's about 6-8 months old, about the elderly lady whose husband used to work for NASA, and he died and left her a piece of a moon rock.
No, I never heard of that.
She had this, this piece of a moon rock that her husband had been awarded by NASA. He had actually been given, he had like signed papers, the whole nine yards, and he had been given this this reminder of the NASA trips to the moon, and then he died, and she thought, well, this thing's not doing me any good. Some collector would probably appreciate it, and any money I get from it, my grandkids, it would make their life better. So she tried to sell it. And one thing led to the other, and the way that they dealt with her, they baited her into meeting at a Denny's restaurant or something like this, and they did a hard takedown of her in public. This is a 70-some-year-old woman. They did a hard takedown of her in public in the Denny's. She literally wet herself as they manhandled her and hauled her out of the Denny's for attempting to sell her husband's moon rock, because NASA claims permanent ownership on all things like that. And so when he died, technically, according to the paperwork, she was supposed to turn it all back into them.
Interesting. No, I had not heard about that, but it does not surprise me. Unfortunately, we live in that kind of a world where, for some reason, the government owns the moon, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they think they own our property. They think they own the moon. They think they own us. You know what I'm saying? This is the world we live in. They think they own us. And nobody owns you. If there's one thing I could stress to everybody out there, you own yourself.
Mm-hmm.
This is about self-ownership. Never bow down to another master. Never do anybody else wrong, either. I mean, that's not a command. That's just a respectful gesture. What I would consider sound advice. But you don't need to bow down to anybody else. These people do not own you. You own yourself. You have the right to do whatever you want, as long as you don't infringe on others. I will repeat this point until the day I die, because it is the best antidote there is to the state and to, this bullied mentality. That's what statists really are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have any control. I had this one person come in I was talking to, and they basically, I don't even think they knew who I was as far as, online. Just a regular person I was talking to about politics. And they basically said something to the effect of, well, I want to take my children out of public school because they're going to teach them that gays are okay. And she's like, I don't give them my approval. And in my head, the only thing I could think of, the very first thing that stopped into my thoughts was, well, it's a good thing they don't need your approval. You know, who in the hell are you? You know? I mean, seriously, who are you?
Uh-huh.
Try and control their lives. I mean, it doesn't matter what they want to believe. They can be Buddhist, they can be Christian, they can be Muslims, they can be atheists. As long as they don't infringe on other people and don't harm other people and don't, you know, infringe on other people's freedom, there is nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So I don't see why you even have a voice in their lives, in their relationship. You know, who are you?
Yeah.
Who are you? This is the bully mentality of, oh, I have to have a word in everything. And this is another thing that's kind of hilarious to me, when people are so gung-ho about democracy. And don't get me wrong, more people voting in the government versus most monarchies, you know, throughout the world, they usually are a better standard of living. That doesn't mean that true individual freedom isn't the best. But, you know, this ideal that we have democracy already, true democracy, to all those who really believe in going out here voting and this is what's the best, true democracy would mean that you would vote on everything,
mm-hmm.
On when your neighbor could eat, when I can literally go to the restroom,
mm-hmm.
you know, what kind of makeup my mom can buy. On when I can breathe, you know, this is true democracy. Every second, you'd have to have a phone out there. And what I'm really trying to get at here is true democracy is impossible.
Yeah.
So really what people are praising is just this intangible, mythical ideal of a state that somehow, you know, you can have enough people controlling, you know, this other bad sector or bad ideal to prosperity, perfection. The truth of it is we need to have competing ideas, and that's what voluntarism allows. It allows for multiple peaceful people to go out there and express different ideals and ways of doing things outside of state intervention of efficiency, because the state, I don't think anybody truly believes the state is highly efficient. And I'm not saying that the businesses that are in the sector today, out in the world around us today, are efficient either. A lot of them come from government licensed and backed and protected,
mm-hmm.
And tax loopholes, subsidies, you know, all forms of protectionism, whether they get barriers, you know, of entry tariffs on their competition, all sorts of things out here. Corporatism is running rampant, but corporatism is only possible with the state and its oligopolization/monopolization powers. Anything outside of the, you know, government, you can't have corporatism.
Right.
So in a true free society, you can't even have corporatism. But it's just so important for people to realize that this ideal of democracy that they've been raised into, it's really just a big facade. It has no validity as far as being ethical and right and just. It actually is unethical outright by infringing on peaceful people just because might said so, because might makes right. That mentality is a bully mentality, not mm-hmm. an ethical mentality. So that's one thing we also have to help others come to the conclusion. Coming down the road here, it just seems to me that people need to understand that anarchy is not without government. Anarchy is choice. Anarchy is simply choice.
Mm-hmm.
So when people denounce anarchy because there's no government, they're not thinking about how it opens up freedom and choice for good people.
Right.
They're just thinking about how their false idea of how the police will catch all the bad people is not going to be there anymore, even though it's failed flat. You know, it's landed straight on its nose, face flat, tripped over, the roots of freedom sprouting up behind it, and now it's caught up to it, and it's in front of it, and it tripped and it fell and it landed right on its face, right on its nose, and the state is truly evil. But we really need to help people understand that anarchy is actually a good thing. It's a choice. So, you know, if we could shift that ideology from thinking of anarchy as no government, and instead, and keeping that as well, I mean, we want that characteristic, obviously, but to also shine the light that anarchy is choice, and that's really, the best way that we can approach any discussion or possible argument we might run into in the future with statists.
One of the things that I like to throw out in reference to anarchy is that my family has family reunions. We go in Appalachia, in eastern Kentucky, we go back all the way into the 1600s. So my family will get together back there in eastern Kentucky, and they have, anywhere 50, 75 or more people will show up. And we're miles away from the nearest real town, so there's no possible way police could get out there if there was ever any kind of a reason to call the police. And these people, a lot of them don't even like each other. And yet, everybody shows up. Most of them bring food. There's always more food than we can eat. And many of them are armed, not always openly, but some of them openly. And there's generally drinking involved, although some of them are really strong religious people that don't believe in drinking. And yet, in all the years that we've had our family reunions, we've never had a single fight, we've never had a single incident that required any kind of outside authority, because everybody understood if you're going to be here at this particular person's property and behave with the rest of us, then you're going to behave like this. Otherwise, we will self-police you and you won't be here. And it was just a silent understanding. And it's been anarchy year after year at my family's family reunion, going all the way back into like the 70s. And it's pure anarchy. And only four or five of them actually understand that. So we have anarchy.
You're scaring me here, Ben. Anarchy? How could you?
But we have anarchy constantly. We just don't realize that's what we're looking at.
Right, and you know, this all goes back to, I made a video called Let Me Opt Out. Let Me Opt Out, basically, I mean, I guess the title kind of sums it up. I kind of went into in depth about how, if I don't want to fund the opera, well, I don't want to fund this charity, and I'd rather give my money to a different charity or just keep it to myself and create another job by spending it inside the economy somewhere else. That's my choice. You know, I should have the right to opt out of whatever you're doing. You don't automatically assume that the social contract that holds weight, that I'm automatically opt in to what you're doing. I have the right to opt out. Mm-hmm. And along with that, another thing, and maybe in contrast to this, you know, help them understand, guys, you can't give away, you know, a right to somebody else that you guys don't even have yourselves.
Right.
Not only do I have the right to opt out of it, but you can't just say, oh, well, you know, I can't go steal from somebody, and neither can Jane, but somehow me and Jane together can go steal from them. That's ethical all of a sudden. No, that's not how it works, you know. It kind of goes back to the one versus 100 versus a 300 million argument I was talking about earlier. Point is, you have the right to opt out, at least in freedom. Statism doesn't think you have the right to opt out, but you do. And look what happens when you do, you know, like what you're talking about with your family. It's not all chaos. It's not all bad. It's just people living and enjoying things without all this bureaucracy and red tape and people basically driving away economies, because that's what, you know, usually the stronger governments are, the less of a productive sector you're going to have, especially as the government takes over production. That's an obvious. But, you know, going back to this argument, you have the right to opt out. Just like you have the right to opt out of, you know, not funding opera, mm-hmm. or not funding, you know, some certain charity, you have the right to opt out of government. And nobody has the right to force you into it just because a group of them come together and try to delegate this right to somebody else.
We're about to run out of time. Is there anything that you want to, any links or any websites that you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, Ben, thanks for having me on the show. Hopefully I can come back real soon. Another thing, you know, I'm going to try and talk to Stefan Molyneux and see if you and I and James Cox and him, if all of us can get together on some type of a round table or, you know, some type of a discussion where the four of us are contributing and just go over things that we think are important. Maybe we could just, you know, spend 30 minutes of his time. I know he's a very busy guy. We were talking about this off air.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I look forward to doing more work with you. I thank you so much for your diligence in spreading the message of freedom and helping others understand the non-aggression axiom, the non-aggression principle, and true voluntarist principles. Anybody want to come check out my stuff? Hey, I appreciate your time. I'm always willing to talk to you. Remember, I'm a busy guy. I have, you know, I work 50 plus hours a week, and plus, because even when I'm at home, I have to run this other institution, this other, you know,
mm-hmm.
this other private sector firm. But I'm a busy guy. But if you want to come over and talk to me, talk anytime. I'm on Facebook. That's facebook.com/ShanklinMike. You can also just put in my name, Michael Shanklin, on Facebook. You shouldn't be too hard to find me. I have my YouTube channel, like Ben Stone was talking about earlier. That's over at youtube.com/MikeShanklin. I also am a contributor at peacefreedomprosperity.com. Peacefreedomprosperity.com is a collaboration. It's a conglomerate of different voluntarists, and we post our favorite articles and basically original new content on the site, videos, articles, pictures. So come over there and check it out, peacefreedomprosperity.com. Also, on voluntaryvirtues.com, that's my website, voluntaryvirtues.com. I think I'm about to hit 150,000 hits on that website, which I really haven't even marketed. So I'm pretty happy about that. You know, mm-hmm. wait until I start actually using the site more often. We'll see where that goes. The YouTube channel, actually, it's about to hit 1 million video views, mm-hmm. and it's already hit over 250,000 channel views. So get involved. It's really fun. It's improved my life. I would encourage others to do it. Come check out my videos. I think it'll at least create great discussion. It might give you ammo so you can spread it to your family and friends, family members and friends who might be on the edge of voluntarism, those who are maybe open-minded or at least open enough to hear this type of an argument. Mm-hmm. I welcome you. And once again, Ben, thanks for having me on the show, and I look forward to working with you more in the future.
Thank you very much, Mike. And folks, for links to all those things Mike just said, and also for more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.